Hi everyone, my name is Hennessy Stislow, and I'm here on the Arm Hug podcast. So I just want to introduce a new guest that I met at an event very recently, and I just remember hearing her pitch and hearing about her company, and I saw what Dr. Martin was talking about. She's the owner of CEO and CEO of M&B Sciences, a technology-focused life sciences firm. She's got over 28 years of experience in this life sciences industry, but it was great that there's a fusion of things that she's working on. You know, it's not just data, it's not just tech, it's not just healthcare. The way she spoke about it was how they were all combined and working together. In the little bio that you sent me, that you've worked with clients in several different therapeutic areas: diabetes, cardiovascular disease, oncology, immunology, dermatology, infectious disease. I mean, is there a favorite that you have? Can you tell us a little bit about how you got started in this?
Sure. I guess first off, I'd like to say thank you for your invitation here today. It's an honor and pleasure to be with you. But yes, I've worked in many therapeutic areas. I'm a pharmacist by background. So, by virtue of the fact that I'm a pharmacist, of course, we have to be knowledgeable in many different therapeutic areas. But I've worked in infectious disease, immunology, cardiovascular. A lot of that was through my former life where I worked in, I actually did work in the pharmaceutical industry space. So working for Abbott Laboratories, AbbVie, I actually worked in the payer space as well for a large international, I guess, insurance company. So a lot of that was through, first off, through working for the pharmaceutical company and the different therapeutic areas in which they had products. So in supporting those products, of course, I had to develop my expertise in those particular areas. Then moving on, able to kind of extract that knowledge, or I guess maybe extrapolate that knowledge to make it applicable for my space now at M&B Sciences, where we do use technology to focus on, I guess our company is kind of two arms, but focusing on patient recruitment, retention, clinical trials in those different areas that I have therapeutic expertise in. I do feel kind of, however, that some of our methodology is really kind of disease state agnostic. So I think it's applicable across a number of disease states. But yeah, I guess those are kind of the areas that I've worked before.
That's exciting. And so, what, if you can get us started with, is a clinical trial in your experience?
So a clinical trial is basically a research study that looks to answer the question of whether or not an investigational drug, or it could even be a device, but it answers the question about whether or not that particular therapeutic is effective in people. So when we say clinical trials, we are referring to the study of those things in people. Preclinical refers to the phase where it's tested maybe in animals, or looking at the test tubes and just the kind of real science, clinical science part of that, or lab science part of that. So we call that preclinical, but when we're talking about clinical trials, that is actually the study of those things in people.
Yeah, that's amazing. And why do you think people should care today a lot about? Because I feel like this is one of those things where clinical trials are always set in the background. Like it's like, oh, we might need to do that to prove something. But I think there's more to that, to clinical trials.
Yeah, there is so much more to clinical trials. I think it's important that people care about clinical trials because, as all of us know, in the recent number of years since COVID, so many things have been really put in the spotlight with regard to inequity in healthcare in general, but inequity in the clinical trial space as well. And so, along with that, meaning underrepresentation of all sorts of groups within the clinical trial space. So, if you know, a doctor is going to prescribe a medication for me. I, as a patient, want to know that it's been studied in people who are like me,
right?
Whether that is, you know, people of my age, my gender, my maybe socioeconomic status, maybe it matters where I live geographically. But I think everyone has the right to have the assurance that the medication that they take has been, in fact, studied in people that represent you.
Right.
So that's why I think it's important that we pay attention to that. I think a lot of the news reports, you know, the last several years were highlighting the need for diverse populations in the COVID vaccine trials. And I think in the, you know, most recent past, that's when people started paying a lot of attention to the fact that, okay, well, if they're highlighting that we need representation or diversity in clinical trials, obviously that's telling us that there's a lack of diversity in clinical trials in general. And so that is one of the reasons, so that people are assured that the medications they take are tested in people who represent them. I think another reason that people might be interested in clinical trials, especially those that maybe are in underserved populations, or those that maybe lack adequate health insurance or maybe no health insurance, is that I believe, and we try to disseminate the message, that clinical trials or clinical research can be used as a care option. So say, you know, a patient is diagnosed with breast cancer, or maybe they have rheumatoid arthritis or some new diagnosis and they are not adequately insured, or maybe don't even have any insurance. It is possible that a clinical trial can be a source of care for them. Because one of the messages that I want to make sure that everyone knows, that when you are in a clinical trial, at a minimum, and I'm probably using clinical trial and clinical research interchangeably, and they mean the same thing to me in this context. But if you are involved in a clinical trial, you are at a minimum going to get the standard of care. So there have been so many things that have been put in place in the last several decades to protect patients who are participants in clinical trials. So at a minimum, you have to get what is the gold standard for whatever your particular disease state is. So if you have a disease where there's a certain drug that's the, you know, the standard, you're not going to be put in a clinical trial and get nothing. So you will get that standard of care. You will have doctor's appointments, all of those sorts of things that maybe you didn't have access to before. And so that's something that I invite people to really start thinking about, is that it can be a source of care for you.
Do you know what sources are out there for finding the right clinical trials for the people?
Well, that's a great question. My company actually has a tool for that. We have a website called neighborhoodtrials.com. There are other sources of clinical trials information as well. There's clinicaltrials.gov. I think one of the things that we seek to do with our resource is make the information understandable. We make it easy for people to put in their geography and try to find out what may be near where they live. And that's hence the name Neighborhood Trials. So there are several resources. As I said, clinicaltrials.gov is the gold standard, and many resources kind of cull that information from clinicaltrials.gov and then add on the things that they believe make it more user-friendly, such as, you know, easy to locate geographically, making the language easier to understand, or maybe making it easier to search for your particular disease state. And so that's something that we seek to do with neighborhoodtrials.com. You know, anyone who might be interested in a clinical trial, I would always ask, you know, that they consult with their caretaker or their provider as a source of information as well. That is always a good start too.
And then, in your experience, do you see that a lot of healthcare professionals are the ones that are telling patients to get involved in clinical trials? Or do you think it's like the doctor Now, I know this by experience too. So I used to work in clinical research. So a lot of the things were referred by the doctor, and it's exactly what you're saying. There might be a drug out, but it's not out on the market, and we're looking to find more research about it, and we need to enroll patients to take a look a little bit further into this data. So we might enroll someone as a test subject. But I'm trying to see, like, do you think a lot of the, let's say, the people who are doing the blood draws, so I'm speaking phlebotomists or nurses specifically, do they actually get a chance to, I guess, talk about clinical trials? Do you think they should?
So that is a great question. With you having been in clinical research, you probably are aware that the people who involved in are involved as investigators or providers within clinical research. The same people tend to get utilized over and over again. And so currently, like if you're in one of those pockets where that's a common occurrence, then maybe you get that benefit. I do think the nation as a whole, though, there's a lot of education that can be done toward the community level physicians, toward community level practitioners, to make them more educated about even how to find out information on clinical trials that they can pass on to the people that they treat. One of our objectives, and you ask a little bit about working with the underserved, is that we also have a community-based approach to getting out information about clinical trials. So we work with community organizations who may be providing services to people, maybe in education or housing or other areas or churches, where they already have that connection to the people that they serve in their community to get that information to them to help them disseminate that information. It's a steep learning curve, but I don't think that most providers are telling their patients about clinical trials. I don't think that most practitioners are telling their patients about clinical trials. It's just that if you're in one of those pockets where it's common, and those pockets, I mean, they're pockets, it's not widespread. Those people do have the benefit of learning, but we need to do a better job of that. And you mentioned phlebotomist. I mean, I think any healthcare professional that has that frontline interaction with the patient is in a great position to help share that information with them. But yes, I think we all have a lot of work to do in that regard to getting that information out there.
Right, because I mean, if all of the information is always the same, like you already talked about, if it's the same people, it's going to be the same information. So whenever it's another person, a different gender, a different race, then we're stuck with no information. And it's like, as always, kind of check that box, not sure.
Yes, one of the initiatives that we have is just identifying, we have like a list of top 100 diverse communities across the country. 100 is a lot for us, with the size of our business to bite off and work with. So we are working fast and furious in the top 30. And they're geographically dispersed across the United States, where we are working with the minority chambers of commerce. We're working with community organizations to find out, what are the resources in those communities, in their opinion, because every community is different. What is the best way to get that information out to the people that need it? Because when you talk about diversity, it's not just, a lot of people think white, black, Hispanic. But we want to get representation across races, across ethnicity. I think it's important when you're talking about diversity to look at things geographically, because a lot of times you have the rural populations that don't get access to many, many things that people in urban areas get access to. And what difference does that make if you have a therapy in a rural population taking it versus an urban population? What factors there are going to make, one population versus the other either respond or be able to persist with the treatment, all sorts of things. We want LGBTQIA representation in clinical trials. You know, we don't want just the young people who've only had the disease for 5 or 7 years. You know, we need that older population that's got the very severe disease. And a lot of times in clinical trials, the elderly with the severe disease are excluded. So we really have to broaden what we think about when we think about diversity in clinical trials and make sure that there's representation across all of those subsets.
Yeah, and I think you said it beautifully. I mean, I think that it's still like when you hear the word clinical trials, it's a mystery. It's always like, huh? So it's supposed to be a mystery because we don't know the long-term effects of something, or we are studying this. So it's supposed to be, you know, we're just collecting data where we're not really supposed to ever end or understand fully what it is, because it's research, or, you know, like people always find different ways of describing what is clinical. It's so confusing too. So just kind of like wanted to also point out that, you know, for everybody who's listening to this, that part of your job too is also to inform. So inform people that the patients that you're seeing, if there's opportunities for them to take advantage of this, if you felt that it helped you or someone that you know. So
that's exactly right.
Yeah. And so are you hiring anyone, just because sometimes people ask for hiring opportunities, or what do you think is next? What do you see next for you guys?
Well, for us, you know, we are, I mean, of course, there are always positions that we're hiring for. We have people in so many different areas, because kind of as I've described with our company, we do really have a concerted focus on community outreach. We have the patient support specialists that interact with patients who call in. As you kind of alluded to, when you talk about clinical research, people have all sorts of questions. And so we kind of pride ourselves on making sure that there's 24/7, that there's someone available to answer the questions. We know that if you're thinking about participating in a clinical trial, it takes, you know, getting over some hurdles. You know, you may not have ever experienced anyone in your family who's done that before.
Right.
You may be getting pushback from your family about why do you want to do that? So we want to be there to answer those questions 24/7. And so it obviously takes people to do that as well. And, you know, we are a small business. We're a diverse business, obviously, with me being the owner. But we don't plan to stay where we are right now. So we are constantly making sure that our core services, patient recruitment, retention, et cetera, that we're doing well there. But we're constantly kind of strategizing on where do we go next to make, you know, make that next biggest impact. So, yeah, there's no telling what we'll need in the future. As well, because we are always looking for ideas where we can expand.
Yeah, no, that's exciting. I like how you mentioned too, you mentioned the underserved communities, but geographically. That's like a really important point about thinking about things geographically, just because there's so many people who even start businesses or recruit specific patients or see specific diseases in a specific location. And there's sometimes isn't enough aid for that, you know? So I think that what you're doing by collecting this data or getting people involved in clinical trials to think a little bit about, is there something that we can do with this group? And if we can use that to help another group somewhere else is kind of where I see this growing. So I think that's exciting.
Yeah, it is very exciting. And I think for us, and kind of one of the things that makes us a little bit unique with regard to, you know, comparing to other firms, is that focus of being in the community and not necessarily working with just traditional organizations who are in healthcare, you know, by working with, you know, maybe that community group that's looking at education or reading group, you know, in a particular community, or, you know, somebody that's just, you know, helping doing some social services for the elderly. But the important thing is looking at people who are already working in the community.
Yeah.
and forming a relationship with them, because patients and people trust the people that they already know. So if I get a chance to work with someone who's a leader in the community and they trust me, and then they're able to take that information to the people that trust them, then we've definitely got a partnership. So we're looking for ways that, you know, we can help them as well, whether that's through coming out to an event and doing something educational or, informing people in their community or being able to answer one-on-one questions. You know, if you can just get involved in conversations with people, it's just amazing how far that goes to kind of chip away at some of those misconceptions and barriers and things of that nature. So definitely a two-way relationship with helping them out as well on our part.
So do you guys do events? I'm just wondering if you guys have like events or like, what do you call the fairs that they have sometimes? And they're kind of educating the community a little bit about what you guys are doing.
Yes, so we haven't had those where we're the sole sponsor, but we definitely participate in community events.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah.
That's another way of networking with finding out that these opportunities exist. So hopefully someone listening thinks of that light bulb, you know, that's a partnership idea. Is there any?
But, you know, I think it's important that people in the community see us and people who look like us that are out there talking about clinical trials, that are out there talking about healthcare. Just that representation is important. As I mentioned, I'm a pharmacist. So when COVID first started, speaking of representation, I actually went out and got my immunization certification and participated in community clinics giving COVID immunizations because I believe it helps when people see a Black female pharmacist out in their community that's giving shots and they're like, okay, well, you know, come on, tell me the truth about this. You know, so they just trusted me from a different level than maybe they might have trusted someone else. And so even if I couldn't convince them to get a COVID immunization that day, they would at least talk to me and let me ask them questions and they would ask me questions. And I valued what they said and I understood their concerns, et cetera. And so I'm just circling back to the fact that being out in the community and letting people see you is very important, whatever capacity you're in healthcare.
Yes, yes, yes. I just want you to repeat all that. That was great. I think that, yes, you have to be out there to be seen. There really is no other way of doing it. I mean, I get a lot of calls sometimes from people who are saying that they've been unsuccessful with some certain things. And when you ask them if they've been out there kind of, you don't have to go door to door, but even community events and their small fairs, you can't find them, Google them in your community. And they haven't, right? They assume people will just show up at the door if they've opened the door. But how would
you know? If they don't trust you, they're going to pass right by that door.
Right, because they don't know you yet. And is there anything we can do to support you? Is there anything that the communities who are now hearing and learning about what you're doing can support you?
I just think we need so many more healthcare professionals out there taking that message of clinical research or clinical trials as a care option. I think people are sometimes a little bit intimidated to talk to people in their community about clinical trials just because of all the historical kind of baggage that clinical trials have. But that's kind of why I emphasize all of the protections that have been put in place over the last several decades. Maybe if a person wants to be involved in a clinical trial, maybe they can start as a healthy volunteer somewhere. You know, it doesn't have to be the full-fledged 5-year multi, intervention kind of thing. So maybe there's a place that they can step into it without as much, reservation. But just talking about it and considering it a viable option is something that's very important. So I think any healthcare professional that is out there on the front line, having that, one-on-one interaction and face-to-face time and contact with patients, I mean, they're the perfect ones to know. Does this person have insurance? Are they struggling? Are they, not being properly treated, or maybe they're at the end of the rope with regard to the treatments that they've received for their particular disease state. Nobody knows that like that front-end provider or that frontline healthcare worker, or, even the phlebotomist that's seeing the person repeatedly and saying, hey, have you ever thought about a clinical trial for this? There may be something else out there that can help you. So.
Yeah, no, thank you, Dr. Martin. That was amazing. That was my last question. If there's anything you want to add here, plug, or sometimes people add their social medias to follow or website, but I think I'm going to include all of that stuff below your video anyway. But thank you so much. I mean, this kind of information, if we don't hear it from people like you, you know, it's hard for people to believe it's true or it's even out there.
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity. I guess one point of clarification is it's sometimes a little bit confusing for people. So we, or my company is M&B Sciences, and our patient recruitment platform is neighborhoodtrials.com. So you'll probably see if you ever go to the site, it says neighborhoodtrials.com powered by M&B Sciences. So we are one and the same. And so we can be followed on Instagram at M&B Sciences. I think it's M&B Sciences. And we also have a Facebook page at Neighborhood Trial called Neighborhood Trials. If you search for Neighborhood Trials, you'll be able to find our Facebook page. And of course, our website is mbsciences.com. So
great.
There's a link to all of that from the webpage.
Amazing. So yeah, you guys should definitely reach out. And if you're interested in clinical trials or learning more about it, it's amazing. If you love research and you love science, it's an incredible world. It's definitely, it's vast. There's so much research and so many different types of diseases, or if you have diseases that are close to your heart, or you know someone who has that disease, it becomes like a mission. And I think clinical trials are a great way to just get involved and learn how to support people. Essentially, it's going to come from us or from who, right? Who's going to be able to spread the word if it's not us?
Yes. Thank you so much for this opportunity today.